Hello and welcome to the Black Ladder podcast, a collection of conversations with interesting Black individuals who not only do amazing work but are consciously helping others to climb the career ladder too. Whether it's music or medicine, fashion or farming, tech, science or the creative arts, we'll be sitting on my sofa talking about what they do, how they got there, lessons learned along the way and what being Black in their workplace means to them. I'm your host Ife, bringing you Life Without the L. Hope you're comfy, let's get to it. Today's guest is Tola Apampa. Tola is a risk advisory and audit manager at Deloitte. I'm sure you heard Deloitte and audit and you're probably thinking he's an auditor, but you're wrong, he's way too cool for that. He actually manages a large-scale robotics and intelligent automations division where he specializes in the financial sector, working with tier one and two banks. Prior to joining Deloitte, Tola was an associate professional services consultant at Microsoft before moving to Accenture as a robotic process automation developer. On this week's episode, we talk about doing things at the right time, business chemistry, tech in the banking world, converting a contracting role to a permanent one, unconscious bias, and my personal favorite, robots. Even though we were commuting buddies for several years, it was so nice to hear Tola's story again from a new angle. Don't worry, the long-ass commute is something that comes up. Two words that continually come to mind for me on this episode were perseverance and patience. Tola starts this episode off by telling us that he never does things the easy way. So stay tuned to find out more about his route to becoming a manager at the age of 27.
Who am I? Who am I? Now I'm playing.
You know you're not playing. You say it like you are playing, but we know you're not playing.
A little bit.
I do feel like that's the music you want.
I mean, they have to know who I am.
How are you?
Yeah. I'm good, thanks. How are you doing? Nice to be here.
Thank you for coming. I really appreciate this. And I know that the listeners and everyone appreciates it. I think it's just so important that we share more about what Black professionals are doing in their jobs. Guys, we are adhering to social distancing rules. I'm recording from my flat and he is recording from his place. So we are not meeting up. Hopefully this weekend Bojo will let us out. I was going to say people to say that you are friends with Boris Johnson, and a way to prove this is if you Google him a ninth.
Okay, we don't need that publicity. We do not need that publicity, please. These are false claims.
Okay, so the podcast is obviously breaking down into several different sections, and we're going to start with a quick fire section because we want to get to know you a little bit. I know you, but they don't know you like I know you. That sounds like a rhyme that Usher would say, but
it does.
It really does.
Dropping lyrics, your side hustle.
You know, I have many side hustles, that's just one of them. So let's start with the quick fire round.
Let's go.
So, first question, what's your name?
My name is Tola Apampa.
What's your job title right now?
Right now, I am a manager at Deloitte.
And what motivates you?
Ooh, what motivates me? Good question. I guess, just always wanted to be successful and independent. And also, my family motivate me, I think. My mum.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice answer. So think back to when you were like little, maybe age between 4 and 11. What did you want to be when you were younger?
I think I actually wanted to be a pianist. So our primary school did this video where we all sat in front and said what we wanted to be. And I found that video recently.
Oh my God.
And I literally said I wanted to be a pianist. But let's just say that that dream was short-lived.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So what was your first ever job? And when I say first ever job, I mean the job you got money from.
So my uncle owned an electronics shop. So I did a work experience there, selling TVs and just doing customer service stuff. But that was very short lived. I just did that for like a week.
A week. Where was and this then shop based?
It was based in St. Albans.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then my first proper job that I actually did over summer was at Sports Direct.
Oh.
Yeah, that That place.
Everyone works at Sports Direct.
Yeah, I think the barrier to entry is just low. So that's what made it quite easy for me to get.
So a little background knowledge, guys. Tolo and I are, like, we've grown up together all our lives, honestly. So we both kind of grew up in the same area. So Sports Direct was quite big back in the day for first jobs. So, you know, it was a kind of a rite of passage. And, yeah, all the mandem out there who know the Galleria, big it up one time in it.
Shout out to Sports Direct.
Okay, so moving on. Tell us a little bit about your education. So it'd be great to know about your A-levels or whatever equivalent you did for A-levels, your university, what university you went with to, and also what degree you studied.
Yeah, so I was, I had quite a journey. So let me take it back to my GCSEs.
Yeah.
I never took a straight path nowhere. GCSEs, it was all going well, but then I was quite ill a lot. So my GCSEs, I remember I was in the hospital at the time where I meant to be doing my exams. So the doctor actually told me not to do my GCSEs.
Wow.
But of course, being as determined as I was just like, nah, watch me work. So did my GCSEs. Favourite subject was ICT, so got A's in that.
Nice.
And then I was quite proactive as a kid, I'm not going to lie, actually. Do you remember Connections?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so I actually wrote down a whole 5-year plan. I actually had one. I wrote down so much what I wanted to do. But the way I plan is I just have an objective and then I worry about the middle parts in between. And it's actually interesting because I think like last year my mum kept that piece of paper and she showed me and everything I wrote down, I actually did.
Are you joking?
Yeah. So as a kid, I was just very motivated to just do well and succeed. So during the GCSE time, I did a lot of research because I knew I liked ICT from early. I was already looking at kind of universities and stuff. And I noticed that they didn't have any kind of grade requirements from ICT as A level. They only had like maths, English and stuff like that. So I remember going to open days and stuff and looking into it more, and I think I asked the question why, and I think because ICT was a bit different to technology that you do, like computer science for instance. So for that reason I opted to go to college instead of A levels. So I did a IT and business course that my university would have accepted, like quite a few universities accepted. And then I think that's definitely the right approach for me because I thrived in that, got like distinctions. I even got an award actually when I was applying to university. So I went to the University of Birmingham. And to get in, because I think they were rated quite high for computer science at the time. So I had to do an aptitude test.
Wow, this sounds quite intense.
It was, yeah. It was. And I remember, I'll never forget, the journey to Birmingham was emotional. Like, there was traffic, so we were late. We were running late. And I just said to my mum, oh, forget it. Let's just turn back. Because I think at that point in time, I was wanting to go to Royal Holloway as my first choice.
Which is a lot closer.
Yeah. So we persevered anyway, got to Birmingham. I was late. Everyone's already in a room about to do the aptitude test. So imagine how frazzled I was. I was a bit late. I stumble in. Everyone's already sat down doing the exam. So I just sit down, trying to calm my mind down to actually do this test and then do the interview with one of the lecturers afterwards. So I did all that. And it must have been just God's grace, to be honest, because afterwards I found out that I got accepted. Oh, I even got like a scholarship for outstanding interview. They really liked my interview.
Wow.
So I got a scholarship for that, and then I also got another scholarship for non-A level academic excellence.
Oh my goodness. You know, I didn't know that about you.
Yeah. At all. So that all came from Birmingham, and that basically just made me say, okay, this is definitely the university I'm going to go to.
So what was the name of the subject you were studying at Birmingham, by the way?
Oh, sorry. MEng in Computer Science and Software Engineering.
Nice. I didn't know all that about the exams and the aptitude test and the interviews. I didn't know that. That's fantastic.
There's a lot of hurdles to jump.
Yeah. My gosh. And did you do a master's? Because I, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think your degree included a master's, right? So you weren't there
So that's the MEng.
Okay. So you were there for 4 years instead of three.
4 years, yeah.
What was that like being the, because all your friends, I'm guessing, graduated after 3 years.
Yeah, end of uni is very, very bittersweet for me. So, of course, I had the first 3 years, which was great. But then all my friends graduated. Mm. But the good thing is I still had a few people that I knew about. One of my friends, actually, interestingly enough, we started computer science together, but the course wasn't for him. So he dropped out, took a year out, and then came back to do economics. So he was still about, so I lived with him and some other people in my fourth year. Mm-hmm. And then towards the end of my degree, so graduation in July, I can't remember when exams were or whatever, but fortunately my dad passed away in March. So, and then I went to Nigeria for the funeral stuff. Mm-hmm. So this is my final year. Still hadn't finished my dissertation, that was still going on. There's still some lectures going on. Yeah. So I was away for a month. I came back and when I went back to the university to find out what's going on, they basically said I could either do my exams in summer or defer till next year.
Oh, gosh.
And that's I said to them, no. Yeah. I said to them, no, I want to graduate as planned.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, let's go away and see if that's even possible, because obviously I'd missed a lot of stuff.
Mm.
And I guess I didn't really process it at a time, but my main reason for that being was because I would talk about my dad coming to my graduation a lot with him in July.
Yeah.
So we're planning this whole thing. And then also after it happened, I was just thinking, okay, what can I do to help my mum out? Because I was like, okay, if I can at least do this, that's one less thing she has to worry about.
Yeah.
So a couple of days passed and then they said, okay, fine. We'll let you go as continue as normal, since that's what you want.
Mm.
So went back to uni, had to catch up on everything, as you can imagine.
Oh,
obviously missed all the interviews and stuff I had lined up for graduate jobs, because I was away in Nigeria for a bit, and then when I got back, as well, deadlines had passed, it was a bit intense anyway for me to be worrying about that on top. But luckily, God's grace and strength, I was able to get through it, and I graduated in 2014.
Whoa.
To show my age.
My gosh. T, honestly, yes. I'm like kind of speechless. I should be like prompting you more, but like even just hearing the story again, and because I think I remember when all this was happening, but you know, I have the worst memory, so sometimes I forget how it really happened, but that must have been really tough. Let me ask you a quick question about when they said, okay, you can carry on. Did they, like, was there any point where they said, okay, we'll give you some grades based on what you did, or like did they give you any exceptions, any allowances at all, or just did you just have to catch up on your own?
Yeah, not really. I just had to catch up on my own, because I think the time it happened was you know, I'd missed the lectures and stuff, so I had to talk to friends and get any lecture notes I needed.
Yeah.
Just independent, and I just thank God for the mental tenacity to do it, actually, because I remember even going back, obviously I was away from my mum, brother, still grieving at the time. And I still had people coming up to me telling me how stressed they were, you know, just about exam season in general. So, and the way I deal with things is slightly different. Like, I'm very comfortable with myself. I have my approach to doing stuff. So, luckily, I was able to just stick to how I operate, how I work, and still
get through it.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, this is, I feel inspired by you. Okay. Next question is on salary.
Yes.
We want to know how much users get in paid, but we have four brackets. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
So low, 0 to 23K. Medium, 23K to 45K. High, 45K to 100K. Extremely high, 100K plus.
I'll be in the high bracket.
Ballin'.
we try. Need to get to the super high, you know, that's the ambition.
In fact, I'm trying to exceed the super high.
So what they say, we gotta reach a billy first.
Okay, and last question of the quick fire round is, what's your favorite color?
Blue.
Ooh, what is with blue?
Listen, blue is just calming. Color of the sky, everything. I love blue.
Oh my gosh.
My wardrobe, I look like a Smurf when I was younger. I just had blue, just like everywhere.
Okay. Okay, guys, so we're going to go on to the next section, which is part two, or part 2A, where Tola is going to run us through his career ladder. So T, it'll be great if you could tell us a little bit about graduation day, just tell us how you were feeling, and sort of run us from end of graduation to today. Is that good?
Yeah.
That's quite varied. But, and don't forget to add all the juicy stuff as well. We want to know it.
I'll add some spice, don't worry.
Thank you.
A little salt bay tickle. Oh,
this is great. I'm excited. Okay, let's go.
So, graduation day for me was a little bit bittersweet, I guess. I was happy, but then also missing my dad there. But then also I graduated the day before my birthday, so next day was my birthday. So I think I wasn't really thinking about a job immediately on my graduation day, but when I came back home, settled a bit, I was like, okay, now the hustle begins, because obviously I missed some of my interviews, like I said to you before. So I remember I did a couple of interviews, I can't really remember, and then there was a recruiter that reached out to me for one particular job. I remember saying to my mum, I was like, ugh. You know, sometimes we can't be bothered because you've done so many applications and, like, you know, you tell your whole life story and barely get a text back. Mm-hmm. It's one of those. So I was using recruiters as well. And this recruiter got back to me about this consulting job. So I was like, okay, fine. But I said to my mum, I'm not really sure. I don't know if I really want to do this. But she's like, oh, I'll go for the interview anyway. Cool. So I went for the interview and it was one of those... It's kind of a smallish firm, and they essentially focused on watch list filtering. So this company is called Furcasoft. They do watch list filtering.
Ooh.
And basically help financial institutions combat anti-money laundering.
Nice.
So basically, I used to tell people I'm fighting terrorism, you know,
yeah,
in my own way.
Helping the world a little bit at a time.
Yeah, exactly. So that's basically what the company kind of did.
Mm.
So I remember the interview process. There was me and a few other fresh-faced people from university. And the way they did it is you had to basically interview with the whole team, basically, because it was like a small office, about 10 to 15 people. In a London, so the company was bigger, it's actually a French company, but in a London office it was about 10 to 15 people. So obviously if someone else new's coming in, the whole team has to be like, yeah, he's safe. So it was me and I think two other candidates, and they basically split us up and split everyone into groups of three or four people that you'd interview with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it was, but I think maybe because I was like, I wasn't too sure about the job or whatever, I was just really relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
So I did all of those interviews very, very differently.
Oh.
Yeah, so I remember the first batch was some more, like, older-looking people, probably, like, their 30s to kind of, like, 50s range.
Okay.
Yeah. So asking me questions, because some of them asked the same questions, basically. So I asked the questions, and I gave serious answers or whatever, in terms of, like, you know, the usual, what are your strengths and weaknesses, why do you want to work for us, blah, 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 blah.
Mm.
So I did all that. Then I moved on to the next group, and I realised that this group was just slightly younger. And I remember they asked me the "What are your strengths and weaknesses?" question.
Oh gosh, I hate that question.
And my answer was wild. Yeah, so I said the strengths legit, and then they said the weaknesses. And then, I don't know, I just assessed the room, and I just, for some reason, just thought this would go down well.
Mm.
And in terms of weaknesses, I think I said one or two. I was trying to think of the third one. And then I just said, rah, like, I haven't even got the job yet. And you already need to figure out how to take me down. Like, I'm Superman or something. But I said it in, like, a banterous way. And then they all just started laughing. And then I think I gave a weak one, like, okay, I don't share my cake. Yeah.
Aww.
So I did that. And they were laughing. So I then went to the next group. Also, like, wherever I could do bantering and show a bit of personality, I did that.
Mm.
So then they had all of us and the candidates, like, sitting in the lobby just waiting for everyone to just finish. And then, like, okay, you can all go back now. And then one guy said, oh, can you stay?
No way.
So then I stayed, and then they found out that's why I got the job.
That's so, okay. I thought they had to do, like, a phone call, but no, okay.
Yeah, no. They did it right there. It was quite bait.
Yeah, but how did the others feel when they were like,
I don't know. They were long gone by the time I got out of there.
My gosh. Okay, so what was the name of that role that you got the job for?
So, company was Furcasoft, and I was a professional services consultant.
Ooh. Nice. So this is your first job out of university.
First job out of university.
Where is this job based?
London, like around Tower Hill.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I love that location. Actually, I loved working there.
It's nice there. Did you have to wear a suit?
No, only when I was seeing clients, actually. Yeah, so in the office, when it's just us, it's kind of casual. Mm. Or if a client was coming to the office, then you'd have to rock a suit.
True.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about you in this role, being at your first job. Is it like a graduate role, or was it just a normal role?
I think it's a normal one, actually, to be honest. Like, I think they wanted to get some grads in, but it was like a normal one, because I guess because of the size of it anyway. So this role, I didn't really know at the time because I was still hung up on, oh, I missed all my interviews, blah, 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 blah. But this role is actually a godsend, actually, when I look back on it. It taught me so much. There's definitely a lot of growth here. So, you know how, like, in big companies, they try to shield you from the client and stuff?
Yeah.
It was not the case here. I had a phone. I had a client, like, tier one and tier two banks, and they would not go to my manager unless there was an issue. So basically, you have a phone, your first line support, whatever they need, you're doing it basically.
No way.
Yeah, so I got a lot of experience quite quickly on.
That's a lot of responsibility as well for someone who's fresh out of university.
Definitely, and I think I loved it. I definitely say I'm someone, I think I thrive in chaos. Okay. So the day-to-day was essentially, they were a vendor and they had this kind of software that helps you, again, like I said, monitor your payments. So essentially, if you wanted to send a payment to me, for instance, it's not really just A to B. Sometimes it goes through other banks and stuff. Uh-huh. So their software basically helped scan it and just make sure that it wasn't a money laundering attempt,
okay,
if that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
So was your role to be that middle person scanning it, or was your role to...
No, my role was to basically install this and configure it on the bank site.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and then you can also configure it in different ways depending on the company's risk appetite.
Ooh.
So it's essentially just the installation and maintenance of their products.
Okay.
Yeah, so a typical day in the life would be... let's say they don't have the software, so I'm speaking to them on the phone, they know what it is. So I need to arrange, okay, a time, when I'm going to install it, how long it's going to take, all their requirements, get that up, and then go and implement it myself as well, okay, which is quite interesting. And this was something that I did both nationally and internationally.
Oh, wow. Did you have to do a lot of managing customer expectations?
Definitely. It's very client-facing, essentially. Yeah.
So you have to say, give them realistic timelines. You can't just be like, oh, yeah, I can do it. You have to be quite, like,
honest. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the thing is, you can't even bluff because you're going to be the one to do it. So if you don't do it properly, it's in your best interest to do it properly.
Yeah.
So I'd give them a date and say, okay, we'll have a kickoff meeting. Okay. The installation will take this long. Yeah, you have, like, a typical IT engagement. You have your beginning stage where you do the requirement solicitation, then you have your implementation phase, your testing phase, your deployment phase. Mm. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you did the whole life cycle.
You were with them on it.
I was with them, yeah.
How many clients did you have, roughly? Would you have on your roster in a typical, like, week or whatever?
Like five or so.
Okay. Quite a lot.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's quite so. Kind of just juggle it and balance it all in. So there's a lot of planning, and you have to, like, organize yourself, organize a client as well, and give them all the technical requirements to say, okay, I'll be coming on this date. Make sure you have this and that set up. So make sure you have the computers ready. You have this amount of storage on the computers, or these settings on the servers, etc., etc.
Mm. Okay. Now, you mentioned earlier about international and national clients. Does that mean there was travel involved?
Yes.
Ooh,
yeah.
Tell us more.
So I used to go to Amsterdam quite a lot, and I also went to Scotland and Luxembourg. Yes.
European.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't really get the best ones. Some people got better ones. I had a friend that went to Mexico, so I went to America.
My
God. Yeah. So I was very kind of Europe. That's where my clients were.
And this was like, wait, was this your first year of working that you already were traveling?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's all industries that where people, like grads, are just allowed to just go traveling and have that much independence on their own.
Definitely not. And even when I say traveling, most of the time it was solo travel. I think the first time I did, I went with someone else, one other person. It was also kind of similar age, so just a year or two above me. And then after that, solo, riding solo.
Wow.
So that was a very nice experience, you know, sometimes going business class in your suit, rocking up to the office.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was quite an exciting period and definitely taught me how to be responsible and just make sure you've planned everything and know what you're doing.
You know, I do struggle with these grad jobs sometimes. Not grad jobs like that, but in general, I always think, with grad jobs, is it better to give people lots of independence and push them into the pool? Or should we guide them? I mean, of course, I do believe people are different. Each individual will thrive in different environments. But clearly for you, you sound like someone who independence is what you're good. You're like, tell me what you to do and you can just go and build it and carry on your own. Would you agree with that?
Pretty much. It's kind of hard to get it in like a grad scheme, so I appreciate the difficulty that firms are faced with, because as you mentioned, people are different. So some people require more structure, some people like are more carefree. I don't know if you've heard of this business chemistry thing. That's what something they do at my company now, which you do a questionnaire essentially and it tells you what type of person you are. So there's different type of people. Like, some people like quite a lot of detail, some people are happy to run away with not that much detail and have the freedom to expand. Some people are more quieter, some people are like more hands-on. So this whole business chemistry is about finding out the type of person you are and then finding out how to work out with the different types.
Nice.
So I think my type was a pioneer, is what they call it.
Oh, do they give a description about what a pioneer is?
They do. Let me see if I can get it, hold on.
It sounds like the founding fathers of America. A pioneer. Oh my gosh, that's actually quite a cool idea, because I actually feel like then you can structure your whole team around it. Because if you know that you in a team you need a pioneer, a leader, a follower, and like two sheep, you can be like, not to diss anyone out there, a sheep is fine as well, but like then you can group them together and you're the perfect team.
So there's four types and you can be like an infusion of two. It gives you the percentage. So pioneer is, there's pioneer, driver, integrator, and guardian. So pioneers love exploring new possibilities. They particularly enjoy working with others and generating novel ideas. Drivers love a challenge. They value competence and particularly enjoy a sharp mind or sharp wit.
Okay.
Integrators are all about connection. They value meaning and enjoy exploring different interpretations of perspectives.
That's me.
Guardians value stability and strive for accuracy and certainty. They focus on details and are known for bringing order to chaos. So my top two were pioneer and integrator.
Nice, very good skills to have for a leader. Okay, so that was good. Tell us more. I'm loving this. How many years are you in this role for? Let's start there.
So, like Chris Brown, I was really not loyal. I was only there for a year.
Okay.
Literally, like, I think I mentioned before, I can't remember if I said, what I said to my mum about going to the interview, I said, maximum I'll be there, it's like for a year.
Mm.
And when I handed my laptop, it was literally like a year to like a day.
No way.
Yeah. So
why you gotta
speak the vision. I think the reason for it was, again, because I had these other ideas of how my career would take off initially before my circumstances. I was already planning how to get back on track, as I say.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize at the time that this was a very necessary step.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, when I left, decided to move on, it's definitely a good role. But I think I didn't want to just work for a vendor. I wanted to branch out and have different experiences and different technologies that I'd worked with.
So you handed your laptop in.
Yes.
You're sad. You're happy. You're excited, I guess.
Happy, excited, because I've already secured the next stepping zone.
Ooh.
So yeah, my advice is if you're going to leave a place, don't just, it's like swinging from a vine. Don't let go of the vine you're on without having a firm grip on the other one. Otherwise, you're going to fall on your face. So yeah.
Very true.
That is a major key, as DJ Khaled would say. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So what was this next vine you had a firm grip on? What's this?
Accenture. Yes.
And what was the role you were?
Software engineer.
Nice. Okay.
Yes.
Tell us a little more about that role. I did some research earlier, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong. You design and develop computer software.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, so Accenture definitely gave me that broader experience of seeing about different systems, different technologies, different kind of use cases. A use case is basically just a scenario in which you'd implement something.
Ooh.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I definitely got that broad range of technology and more a widened my understanding. And I learned a tool called Blue Prism, which is in the robotic process automation kind of area, RPA.
Okay.
And what RPA does is essentially is it helps to integrate systems without having to do a really expensive IT transformation project.
Mm-hmm. Does it reduce human contact as well?
Yes, so you can automate operations really end-to-end where no human interaction is required. Yeah, so you can do it to varying degrees. You can have partial automation or you can have full. Really depends.
Okay.
So this taught me a lot because, again, for some reason, now that I'm Accenture, my clientele extends beyond banks. So I could be working for, you know, retailers or whatever. But still, the trend of me working with banks continued.
Were you okay with that or not?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's quite fast-paced. I enjoyed working at that pace, and it gave me an insight into how banks work, to be honest. So definitely learned a lot of cool stuff. I didn't realize that when you phone your bank to complain or to say, to raise a point, there's a lot of things that go on in the background that people do, and some of it is quite inefficient because banks are very old school.
Yeah.
They don't really like changing their systems because it's expensive and time consuming. So a lot of stuff they'll have people doing is looking at one spreadsheet and another, reconciling values and stuff.
Oh, wow.
So it's not really something that requires judgment, if that makes sense. It's very like mundane and repetitive.
Yeah.
And that's a perfect type of thing for RPA because it can do those repetitive tasks. There's not much logic involved. Less mistakes, as you can imagine. Cheaper as because robots can run 24/7, you know, no holiday, no sick leave, no pay, you know.
True, no smoking break.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's a huge startup cost, but once you have it set up, it'll then pay it for itself and then some.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so that's fantastic. So you're working on these different projects, I guess, mainly still with banks, as you mentioned.
Yes.
And then... Okay, so a question I wanted to ask was, what type of softwares were you preparing for these banks? You just mentioned one, but was there any variety between that? Or so I guess maybe let me ask it this way. If you went to bank, there's bank A and bank B. Was it the same software you made for both of them, or would you like customize it for each bank?
So essentially with Blue Prism, what I mainly used, it's that main software, but I get it to integrate with the different softwares that each bank has. So each bank will have varying software, but how you get them to integrate and work with each other is very, very different.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Sort of like people. So I'm like the main one, but when you introduce two different people, they're like very different, but I'm the mediator so that they can communicate with each other.
Oh, if that makes sense. That's a nice explanation of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And in this role, did you feel like you were using your degree? Did you feel like anything you studied in the past 4 years at Birmingham University was now, were you like, oh, I'm so glad I went to that lecture, it's come through?
Definitely. I think the thing about computer science is it's very, very broad. So you learn a wide array of technologies from databases to Java to like networking and actually understand how the internet works, you know, so all of those things definitely came into play in some degree. Some way, shape, or fashion, yeah.
Okay.
So my degree is quite relevant to the roles, I guess, that I did.
That's true, which is good. You're making the money you spent on that degree is putting itself
to it was work. Quite good, yeah. But then I also found myself kind of in the middle. So an interesting thing that I found in the workplace is some people still have that old notion that technology people are socially inept. You know, so that's why they tried to keep them in terms of large companies. That's why they tried to keep them in a bank, in a back, you know, not really seen and not really having much client interaction. I remember one story, one time when there was a client proposal that they wanted to do, some of the consulting guys, and they were trying to pitch it to this client and they wanted to do a demo. But obviously they don't have the technical skills to do the demo. They didn't really understand it. So they needed to call someone on board. So then I was there to just do the demo. And then I just thought, as naturally, because I'm used to it from my first job speaking to clients, not really a big deal. I just took them through it, made sure they understand it, not using technical jargon, just very simple language. And I remember after the meeting, the consultant came out. I was just like, wow, I'm very impressed. I was like, wow, what happened? It was like, you were able to talk to them. I was like, what are you expecting me to do? Like, I really don't understand his shock. It is like, no, but you spoke like very like clearly and they understood. I was like, yeah. And then I think that started my journey down into being in the middle, kind of the translator between the business and the tech. Because usually they try to separate them. You have a business analyst who normally gets all the business requirements and designs the processes, and then they passes it the spec to the technologist who's then going to create this. You know, so the developer will then make the software or make the process or whatever's been passed on. Mm-hmm. But I always sat on the fence and I kind of dabbled in both areas.
Nice. That's quite a nice hybrid role, actually. It gives you a little bit of variety.
Yeah, yeah, I really enjoyed it, actually, to the point where my last project that I did before I left Accenture, I actually did both roles. So I was my own BA and my own developer, and I just found it a lot easier because there was no knowledge gaps.
Yep.
And whilst I'm talking to the, they call them SMEs, so subject matter expert, okay, about their process, to understand what they do in their day-to-day roles and how I can automate it. In my head, I'm already thinking about how I'd automate it so I can ask them the right questions or position things a certain way and ask them if certain things are possible. Mm. So I have that tech insight to then ask more probing questions, where some BAs don't really probe as much because they don't really know.
True.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I like that you just built your own role there. Just said, you know, I'm going to do both.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Can you tell us a little bit about that? Was there any conflict in that, I guess? Or was there a BA in that, a business analyst, sorry, in that role, and then they left? Or did you just
So I think, because that's towards the end. So like I told you, I started this journey of me doing both anyway. Okay. And there's a guy who's heard about me and knows kind of what I do. So he was trying to set up a project team together. And I think it was appealing to him. I think he even pitched it just because he could save money. You don't need two resources, just have one. Because I think the idea was initially to have four BAs and four developers, whereas he's able to just have three BAs, three developers, and me. Because then, like, because there's four processes, so I could just do both for mine. Yeah.
Wow. It sounds like you built a lot of trust with people here as well, like, or your reputation preceded you.
Yeah, I think that's what I kind of focused on in work. I was just like, if I can do my job well and be known for doing my job well, I don't really have to concern myself about politics. I try to stay out of office politics as much as possible, to be honest.
That's a very good place to be, honestly. Office politics can get the best of us sometimes. So there's four of you on the team. You're working together. How's that going? What is it like working in the team?
I love it. I think I'm quite people orientated, so I enjoy working on teams where I get along with the people outside of work as well, or even if it's just inside work, as long as there's some sort of banter or whatever, I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I think the way I am in the workplace, I bring a lot of personality, to be fair. So I think I also encourage people to bring it out a bit more because I'm already doing it so blatantly. Mm-hmm. Like, I like to say that I'm seriously unserious, if that makes sense. Mm. So I can be very serious when I need to be, but I can also joke around and make people kind of relaxed.
A nicer atmosphere, better culture. So just to quickly touch on this, you mentioned that you're in Canary Wharf at this moment. So this role is based in there, right? Or were you with clients? Did you ever have to go to the client's business?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't make that clear. So I was at Canary Wharf because that's where the client was. So yeah, sometimes you're based at client site. So wherever the client is, that's where I go.
Did you mind that? Like, how did you feel? Because were all your clients based in London?
Yes, I was lucky actually. In Accenture, all my clients are based in London, so for me, it's all right.
Okay.
But then at the same time, I hadn't moved out yet, so the commute was still emotional.
It was bad.
And you know how trains are in Hatfield.
Yes.
And I boycotted them. There was a point where it was raining, I was cold, and this train was delayed. And I was like, the amount of money I'm paying for this train not to be here. So I was like, I'm not having it. Like, National Rail, not getting my money again.
Yeah.
So what I'd do is I'd wake up earlier.
I would
drive all the way to Burnt Oak.
Yes.
Park my car there and ride the midnight train to Georgia. I was on the tube all the way up until Bank. And then from Bank, I'll go wherever I needed to go.
I remember that.
So the journey was emotional. Wow. Like,
okay. So then tell us about your next role. This one I feel like it's one that's quite interesting. I was quite interested in it. So tell us more about what came next after being a software engineer at Accenture.
Yeah, so pretty much, you know that last role I was telling you about, last project where it's four of us?
Yeah.
I remember there was a particular day where the client even used to joke with me. He said, I hope you're getting four paychecks because I was just doing a madness. I think they even created like free logins for me because I was just doing so many different things. So I was doing the most, but I was getting paid the least on that project team. So I remember there's one time a recruiter called me and this is how much confidence I went. Like, I just answered the phone and I just went into one of the meeting rooms. I was just like, okay. And they're telling me about a role to be like a RPA developer.
Okay.
And I was like, don't waste my time if it's any less than this amount, basically is what I said to the guy. And he's like, don't worry, I got you. And he told me what it was. And I was like, you're going to pay me this to do the same thing I'm doing now? Cool. So I was like, he set up the interview. So this was at Deloitte. So Deloitte were recruiting at that time.
Okay.
So he set up the interview. I went to the interview. And do you know what? There's only been like two interviews in life that I know that I've gotten. So that was the Accenture interview. Like, I knew that one, that I was going to get the role and my Deloitte interview. And I think a lot of that came from my first job. So one thing I skipped over is that another part of the responsibilities is I had the experience of interviewing new people.
Oh.
So I got that experience of sitting on the other side of the table fairly early on.
Yeah.
And it just helped my interview technique in terms of how they do it. Because I recognize when I'm interviewing people, sometimes I really want them to get the job, but it's just like, you have to just prove to me that you have sense or just say the right thing at the time.
Yeah.
So for my Deloitte interview, I went for the approach where they asked me the basic questions or whatever, and they're talking about my role. And then I kind of just extended my response to cover all the questions I knew they were going to ask me.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by that is, when they tell me about what do you do, I told them what I did. I told them about what I think the current issues in the marketplace are, how I'll resolve those issues, how I'd run a project as well as me. So basically ticking off all these things that I knew eventually they would have asked me, but I just put it into a nice little package. And the reason why that gave me confidence is because they were just taking notes. They weren't really asking me anything, actually. Towards when it got to the end, they were like, I actually have no questions for you. They didn't really know what to say.
Wow.
So then I was like, cool. Realistically, that's the whole point of an interview, right? It's trying to prove that, okay, I know what I'm doing and this is why I'll be an asset to your firm.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can outline those, and if it's someone that, you know, is in that role, they would also recognize what's currently going on in the industry, you know, what are the challenges, what are the issues, and you can say that you recognize them and you know how you potentially overcome them. I think that's a very good sign that you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, thank you for that. That was like, great interview tips there. Even I love hearing interview tips because you can use these tips in any role. It doesn't have to be like as a software engineer or a robotic process automation developer, you know?
Yeah, so exactly.
I've just said it, but what was the name of this role you were interviewing for?
So as RPA contractor. So funny this as well, actually, because I've always been permanent ever since, but then they had a hiring freeze, but they really wanted me, so they put me as a contractor, but I wanted a contractor to perm deal, essentially.
Okay. Oh.
So
how did you negotiate that out to them?
I just told them straight. I said, I'm in a current role already. You guys, this is another thing. I was headhunted, so like you have to have kind of that braveness as well. Because I remember one guy asked me, so what made you apply to me? I was like, don't get it twisted. You found me, not the other way around.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, I don't really know how to answer that because you found me.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, true. So I kind of put it on them a bit to say, okay, I know you're obviously looking for this skill. This is what I kind of do. You obviously know I know what I'm doing. So contract is not really ideal for me. That's not really what I had envisioned. I'd rather be a permanent member of staff. And you just negotiate with them that. I think you have to be honest because it's a transaction at the end of the day. You know, it's not like I was desperate for a job. I had a job. Granted, this was a better one. But if I'm going to move, I'd ideally like to move to somewhere that caters for what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And if you don't ask, you don't get, you know. So I'd definitely say never be afraid to have the conversation and see what can be done.
That's very true.
Huh. Yeah.
So I think now would be a great time if you could tell us a little bit about a typical day in that role as a robotic process automation developer.
Yeah, a typical day is...
So you're logging in, you're opening... Do you open a laptop or do you go for a meeting first?
Depends. If I'm gonna, well, I always open my laptop first, to be fair. Open my laptop, check my emails, see what meetings I have in the diary. Usually if you're on a project, you'll have like a stand-up if they're working with the Agile framework. And a stand-up's meant to be just designed as a 15-minute meeting where you'll stand around and say what you're going to do and you flag any issues to the project manager or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, this is what we're trying to do for the day. These are the activities that need to be done. This one's progressing well. Okay, there's some blockers on this one. And then after that meeting, you get on with your assigned tasks and you may have, I don't know, maybe some meetings with the client to clarify some of the specifications, or you might just be sat there just developing and just trying to get the system to work as intended.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a typical day in the life of, for me.
Nice.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So did you, how did you find this role? Were you enjoying it, or how long were you in this role for? Let's start with that.
So in this role for 8 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my next question is, were you enjoyed it?
No, I did enjoy it. But like I said, it was a contracted perm. So I stayed with them, but I went as a permanent staff.
Oh, so after 8 months, you went to permanent?
Yeah.
Ah, okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, initially it was meant to be free, but I stayed contracted for 8 months. And I'm not going to lie, I enjoyed contracting. Like, the money is brand new. Like,
yeah.
Lord. Yeah. But I had a plan, see. So I was like, okay, I want to be stable personally and then get my house and move out.
But why, when you say you enjoy contracts and the money's brand new, why not? Okay, so I guess, yeah, no, you've explained it because you said you had a plan.
Well, that as well. And also, because like I said, I was, as a contractor, you're usually assigned for a particular function. So mine was RPA, contractor, basically developer. But like I mentioned to you before, I like doing the client interaction part of it as well.
True.
So I recognize that if I went to perm, that would give me more breath. Does that make sense? I could cover more ground. And also another thing for me, I was like, the level I wanted to go for, going perm, I wanted to go for a manager. So I said, if I can do that as well, I can always go contracting at any time. And then I can say, my last permanent position was, you know, a manager hit.
Yeah.
Because some companies have, you know, with contracted to permit, depending on your experience, but sometimes it can be a bit more challenging if you've only just contracted to then enter a senior perm position.
True.
Because from my experience anyway, it might be different in different industries, but contractors, you typically go and do what you've been basically employed to do. So develop systems or, you know, lead projects or whatever. However, as a permanent employee, you have all this extracurricular stuff you have to do.
Mm.
So as a permanent staff, I'm a coach. I coach people. I have to do all this. The timesheet process is longer. I have to go to all these events. Like, you know, all these extracurricular activities you do.
Yeah.
So stuff like that, essentially. There's more that comes with it than to just your main function. Yeah.
Rather than a get in and get out type thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so after the 8 months, you moved to a permanent role. What's the name of that permanent? What's the title of that permanent role?
So it's called your manager. To be fair, just that, which doesn't give you much insight. Okay. But it doesn't really give much insight. But my department was like focusing on robotics and intelligent automation.
Tell us a little bit about your team at the moment. How many people are you managing in your team?
So currently relatively small team, managing about 7 people.
7?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm in shock because you said relatively small.
I mean, some people out here managing teams of 1,000 people.
Okay, but still, 7, okay. No, but that's still quite a lot. I know people who manage like 3. 7's a lot. How do you find that? Well, okay, another question for you. If there's conflict within the team, how do you deal with conflict?
Oh, this has happened. Oh, there's a period, there's a whole saga where two girls on my team just did not like each other. And just quick background, it's important for the story. I don't drink coffee. I don't like coffee. I don't really drink, but the amount of times they said, can we go for a quick coffee to catch up, basically, because they just wanted to tell me about all their woes with the other person. And the worst part of it is I had to basically do it twofold. So whichever one of them got me first, I would then do that parade, and then the second one would then get me.
Oh, gosh. That's quite tough, isn't it? Because you're trying to do your job, but you also have to help others be comfortable.
Exactly, and especially in a small team as well, because everyone knows each other, especially if they have to work together as well. Because the main gripe was, I don't want to work with her. Like, okay, if you tell me to do it, I'll do it, but I don't want to work with this person. It's like, sweet Lord, like, this is so unnecessary. You know? Because you're just thinking, like, okay, really? But you have to deal with it and approach it in a sensible manner.
That's true.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So I guess you've run us through. We're here till today. You're a manager, which is amazing. And just remind us of the company you're a manager at.
Deloitte.
Woo! This has been so good. I love this run through. It's just been great to hear it in this way, if you get what I mean.
Yeah.
And my mum was saying to me the other day, she was like, every time we recall these people, you're sort of immortalizing them, because forever this date is going to be there. And like, it's so nice. True. If I want to come back to it, I can come back. Like, it's going to be here now forever. That's it. It's locked down. Yeah,
definitely.
And I love that if anyone wants to get into software engineering or robotic process automation, or just if you want to be a manager, they can obviously holler at you. But before we get to that section, let's move on, should we, to the being black?
Sure.
I'm guessing you've done that before.
I've been every day.
So, we're moving on to the next section, which is all about being black, which we both are. So, I guess my question to you is, how has being black affected your career climb?
Yeah, I think it's definitely had an impact, both positive and negative, to be honest. But again, I guess from the area, you know, we're both from Hatfield, how we grew up, it's nothing different, if that makes sense. I'm accustomed to being the only black person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my first job, if I start from there, there was about 12 people that were black in the office. So that was good, had good dynamics there.
Mm-hmm.
But then I noticed a lot of times when I go to clients or when I travel, I was definitely the only black person. So,
was there a situation in which you felt, like, a client situation where you thought,
I think I would say, you say where I felt there could have been issues, basically, because I was black or something. Yes, I've got actually an example, but the thing about this scenario as well is it's hard to pinpoint, because, again, working in technology, and this wasn't a startup, so it's banks, so typically I'm working with middle-aged white men, basically, because, you know, technology's definitely wasn't very diverse at that time. So there wasn't a lot of women in tech. There wasn't, you know. So I had to travel to Luxembourg.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember seeing everyone's reactions. Like, I actually love it when people see me for the first time. Because fresh out of uni, again, my first job, I was very baby-faced. I'm still quite baby-faced. I look quite young. So imagine you just get this young black kid in a suit who's come to basically tell you how to do your job, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I was traveling by myself, but I think these guys just caught an attitude from the beginning. And I remember I was arguing with them for like 2 days straight about just nonsense. Because imagine, right? So let me put this in layman's terms. Because like I said, that job, I installed specialist software to combat anti-money laundering, yeah?
Yeah.
So let me make it simple and say, imagine you want me to install iTunes on your computer, right? Cool. So I come to your house and helping you install iTunes. And you're telling me how to install iTunes, and it's wrong. I'm just like, the whole reason I'm here is because you do not know how to do this.
Yeah.
So why are you fighting me on this? And you're talking to me about, oh, is my security okay? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, this is the way you need to do it. And then you just say, I don't want to do it that way. So essentially that's what they said. They said they don't want to do it that way. And I was like, entertain me. Like, indulge me. How are you going to do it? So we literally argued for like 2 days straight, and it got quite heated at one point. They were like saying, oh, da-da-da-da-da. I remember my manager was trying to calm me down. He was like, relax, it's not your fight. I was like, it's easy for you to say, you're not even in the country right now. Like, cause I'm in a whole different country. And obviously I'm in their offices. So like, they've got all their boys about them, whatever. And then this guy was like, we're going to get our security officer, our security manager, da 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 da. Obviously not like, not security, like to throw me out as in security for the software. Oh. Yeah. I was like, all right, cool, get him. So they got him, and then they're saying what they're saying. I sat comfy. I let them explain, you know, saying, oh, this is what he wants to do, da 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 da. And the security officer just looked at me and was like, yeah, but he's right. I was like, oh, we try to say that. But I can't determine if that was because I was young, because like, I don't know, we just came from different worlds. And I think they're just trying to size me up at that point, you know. Okay. And I think I held my own quite well, because then after the rest of that, they kind of like behave themselves.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really one to stand down. I was just like, you have to be professional. So I was just being professional and just saying, well, this is the way we do it. This is how it has to be done. There's no other way to do it. Da-da-da-da-da.
And yeah, just stick to your gun.
Yeah.
I don't know. Difficult. Would you say that even if people are being racist, what would be the advice you'd give someone in that position? Let's say that situation was completely different. And let's say somebody said something racist to you, or was like a slur, or just wasn't very correct.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you advise people to do to combat that situation?
In that situation, it's a bit difficult because, again, I'm in a different country and I'm in a whole different firm, so I have no people, you know. I wouldn't even know who to call because I'm on their side.
Yeah.
So maybe the person, it depends who it was, because if it's a person that called me over, then, you know, I can't complain to him about that. So I would say just remain composure, hold yourself, take a note, and then when you can report it, definitely report it.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is because just generally, like, in my opinion, we're under a lot more scrutiny. You know, so if you react in that moment, they're going to forget the elephant in the room and then focus on what you did.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just like the less ammo you can give for someone to invalidate the racist attack on you, mm-hmm. the better. Wow. You know,
that was so well said. I like that.
Yeah.
Nice. I love that. I'm like mulling it over. The less ammo you give them, the less they can use it to invalidate the racist attack. That's so true. So I want to know, in your company, do they have any BAME networks? Like, how do they contribute to the BAME society? Do they even? What's the, I guess, I mean, you're not going to know, but I guess maybe you might know, you are a manager, but what's the leadership saying when it comes to diversity in the workplace?
Yeah, they have diversity inclusion. They have a BAME network, and they actually have a newsletter, which is quite good, which gives periodic updates on what kind of the BAME statistics are. So they do recognize that there's a pay inequality. I remember there was a particular day, actually, I came in, and then me and this girl that I managed, we went on an internet page and they put it there, and they had like the female like pay gap for women, and they had like the BAME pay gap report. So we're both just sat there just reading how the differences is between like for women and also for people with BAME. So, I don't even know how you do it, because I guess for you it's double fold.
Yeah, literally.
Struggles real.
So, my final question on this section is quite a different one, but do you think racism still exists in your workplace?
Yeah, definitely. I think so to a degree. I think one thing, especially in my area, just to bring it back to tech, is artificial intelligence, which we also kind of do. And they talk about something called unconscious bias. So this is kind of biases that are formed in your head without you really realizing. And I'd definitely say an unconscious bias that I notice that people could possibly have is when I go into our main building, the majority, if not all of, majority of the security guards are black, and the majority of the cleaners are black. But then as you go up in the office, you don't really see that many black people. So even subconsciously, they kind of see people in those kind of lower roles. And I think I've even recognized it as I've traveled and been to various client sites that I speak to the security guards and stuff more often than I guess other colleagues will. Like, I'll never forget one time I was in Bristol and I was leaving a bank with my colleague. Bear in mind, she'd been there for like 3-4 years, right? Same site, whatever. I was only did like a 1 month cameo. I wasn't there for long. And I'll never forget the way she turned around when we both left. And the security guard was like, hey, Tola, how you doing? Like, probably just greeting me and talking to me. Because she was like, how do you know? I was like, well, I speak to him every morning. Like, he says, good morning. You know, because he just recognizes he likes to speak to me and just talk to me in general. And I'm very receptive to it. And he's been like, oh, well done. Like, it's good seeing you up there as well, because I don't see that many black people dressed like you when I wear my suit and tie, like, going up there. So it's definitely something that happens.
What about, so earlier you mentioned that there are some positive ways in which your race has contributed to your career. Could you tell us a few about some of them?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the best things I enjoy about being black, actually, is that out of necessity, we've had to kind of learn how to present ourselves to different people. So I think just naturally it's helped me build my level of emotional intelligence in assessing my audience. And I think that's helped me in every aspect. So as a manager, I think I'm more receptive to how my team are feeling, whether they're feeling motivated, demotivated, happy or sad. And it lets me respond to that quicker. And even when I'm doing pitches now to like proposition new work to clients, I can tell how best to position it to get the best reception, if that makes sense. And I think that all stems from how I've been raised as just being black and just knowing how to respond in a certain environment, you know.
So we're back with a penultimate section, which is called the top tips bit, which is where we sort of just ask you, what is the advice you want to leave on the career ladder for the next person who wants to either be a professional services consultant or software engineer or work in robotics or just wants to be a manager or just even wants to be working in Deloitte? What advice and top tips are you leaving on your career ladder for them to pick up?
My top tip, more like a general one, is just be true to yourself. I think there's so much power and strength in that. I think one of the main things I've done at work is I just don't like to conform. Obviously, you have to use a sense of intelligence and know where you can be yourself. And it's not like, you know, you just bust in and just start telling mad jokes or whatever. But definitely bring a sense of personality, a sense of character to let people know who you are. As I mentioned in that, my first job interview where I said about my weaknesses and my Superman, like, that went down really well. Even afterwards, when I got the job, people say they really love that part, you know, because it's not just your professional capability that they're assessing in interviews. It's also saying, will you fit into the culture and our team nature? So will you get on with the people that you work with?
Yes.
So that's another important thing. And secondly is be confident in your ability. Like, you've got this far. I trust that you're amazing at what you do. So just believe in that, because don't be afraid to ask for what conditions you need, because it's a two-way transaction, right?
Yeah.
They want to get the best from you and you want the best from your business. And that's why your salary package, your benefits is important. So don't be afraid to have a conversation. It's definitely a two-way thing, because they know the value you provide. And even when asking for a raise and stuff, don't be timid with doing so, because it's very simple that if I put it in this term, if you have your Sky package and you're getting, like, I don't know, 16 channels and you're paying like £30 a month, Sky is going to give you 300 channels for free for no reason, you know. So the same way that they ask for more service, you should ask for more when you're doing more work, you know, or you're adding more value. So definitely know the value you bring. And also, don't feel the need to compete. I think for me as well, because I'm quite strong in what I do, I don't really get into any, I try to avoid as much politics as I can, and work usually comes for me because I've made my reputation. People know what I'm good at. So sometimes I don't have to seek it. It just comes and say, oh, this opportunity has come through. Tola's quite good at this. He'll be best placed for the opportunity. So just focus on you and never stop working and developing on yourself. Like, you're the most important asset that you own.
That's true. These are great tips. I feel quite inspired now. I'm like, oh, I'm a little warm inside.
You're not serious.
So, T, thank you very much for being on the podcast. This has been so fantastic. I do know you, but it's been so nice hearing your story in a different way and sort of sitting down properly. Do you know what I mean? Because I feel like over the years we've just spoken to it, like, day to day on the train journeys, we just talk about it. But it's actually really nice to just hear, sit down and actually focus and say, oh, you know, how did you get from here, there, and how did you make it to here today? So thank you so much for being part of the podcast. I really appreciate it. And also, thank you again for sending the elevator back down so that the next person can climb your career ladder.
Oh, no, definitely. I think it's something that we should do more of. And thank you for inviting me to speak, and thank you for starting a podcast. I think it's definitely good and something I could have benefited from when I was a young buck trying to make it in this game.
Right. So my next question to you and last question is, obviously, if people want to get in contact with you, if they want to get some help on working in Deloitte or working as a software engineer or just working on robotics or even just being a manager, where can they contact you to get some details?
Hit me up on LinkedIn.
Ooh, look how you said that. Hit me up on LinkedIn.
Gotta add a little spice, make it a little bit interesting.
Yeah. Under your name, Tola Apampa.
Yep.
Find him there, people. Do get in contact. He's got so much useful advice, and I know because I know someone else who's asked him for advice in the past, so do hit him up. He has lots to offer if you'd like to. Thanks, T.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Don't forget to share and subscribe to the Black Ladder podcast. It's available on all podcast platforms.